Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things.
Yes, we did. We went burning into the ground. We digging into the ground, burning many things we found. That's the wonderful Dara Williams talking to us from the song, the Solartopia song, recorded with Pete Seeger and David Burns. It is on the Tomorrow's Children album from Appleseed Records. Won a Grammy, as a matter of fact. And here we are again with another hour of the Solartopia Show. It's Harvey Wasserman talking to you. I'm actually talking to you from a cabin at the Turkey Run State Park in Indiana, bringing my kids to camp. And it's a beautiful, beautiful place here, not far from Terre Haute, Indiana, the home of Eugene V. Debs. We have a wonderful show for you today. We have Donald Goldmacher. Don, are you with us? From California, my buddy Don Goldmacher. We've been friends, activists, co-conspirators for longer than I care to say. Don, it's good to have you on board. And Cecile Pineda, did I pronounce that right?
Absolutely, you're right on the money.
Cecile Pineda is the author of a new book called Devil's Tango. Don is the producer or co-producer of a wonderful movie called Heist, about the theft of our nation, what's left of it. And we will talk with both these wonderful people through the coming hour. You can jump in and talk to each other. Cecile and Don, I understand you're really good friends, and this is a great thing. Cecile, you're the author of The Devil's Tango, How I Learned the Fukushima Step by Step. Tell us about this title and what the book is about, please.
The title was more or less dreamed up on acid.
Wait. I'm having a flashback. What year is this?
I imagined what the title would be if I were on acid.
You mean
it's very much a speculative thing. But this book is in that rather rare category of books that has been written by invitation. Donald and I both had a very dear dying friend. We were neighbors, all three of us at the time. And he summoned me one last time when he was dying, and he said to me, I want you to write the book of life and death. 13 days after he died, Fukushima blew. And I understood very well
name?
That that's what the invitation meant.
Mm-hmm.
And it's step by step because, you know, this book is written for everybody. It is not a specialist book. It's not for the academy. It's for people who want to know where they're living and living in the now. And as a result, it's a reflection of my own personal need to try to wrap my head around what I immediately recognized to be a catastrophic accident on a planetary basis.
To describe Fukushima, catastrophic is a grotesque understatement. As I'm sure you know, it is an apocalyptic event, as you kind of saying there on your non-acid trip. you know, three meltdowns at least, three meltdowns, three explosions, possibly four explosions, a spent fuel pool still flying in the air. There is some decent news from Japan today, actually, but we'll get to that in a minute. So this book, The Devil's Tango here, which is not unlike the title Knocking on the Devil's Door of the wonderful movie made by Gary Knoll and Rich Gale and Valerie there at the Gary Knoll empire, shall we call it, or the center of the Gary Knoll's operation. The Devil's Tango is akin to the Knocking on the Devil's Door. So we do have the devil in common here. And what is the devil in the Fukushima step-by-step? Cecile. Give us the content.
Well,
of your book.
Your listeners have been listening to you, and they're very much on in the loop in terms of what's happening. And yes, the scale is apocalyptic, and particularly we are looking at Unit 4, which I think you described, or Alvarez described in a recent program of yours, because it's 10 stories up. Who would design a reactor with the water on the top story, right?
Irresponsible corporate lunatics would do
well,
that.
Well, I think that's the point, and that's one of the points that I want my readers to be aware of. The media has been completely complicit in hiding and shielding us from the truth. These explosions and fires were not the result of a tsunami, my friends. They were the result of a pitifully poor and unforeseeable GE design. It is the GE Corporation, essentially, that manufactured these reactors. They sold them world over knowing they were defective. In fact, one of their design engineers, one of three who quit in disgust, went on record saying to his boss that he was quitting because the GE Mark I boiling water reactor was 10 pounds of energy in a 5-pound sack. And later on, the NRC actually determined that the GE Mark I boiling water reactor had a 90% probability of failure in a stressful situation.
So that's 9 out of 10 chances of failing.
Yes.
And, of course, the Fukushima Unit 1 is a GE Mark I reactor. GE standing for General Electric. And we have 23 of these in the United States of America. Is that correct?
Exactly. Yes. Yes. And of course, the concentration of them is on the East Coast. That is east of the Appalachian Range. And the most notable one is Vermont Yankee, which of course is owned by Entergy Corporation, in which the Clintons hold a sizable position, I understand. Vermont Yankee has, in fact, been leaking cesium and strontium as well. The state of Vermont is now locked in a battle with Entergy Corporation because Entergy says that the federal government supersedes state regulations. However, and correct me, Harvey, here, because I understand there's been a federal court decision in favor of the governor of New York, or rather the district attorney of New York, who brought suit, Eric Schneiderman. And the judge handed down a decision that, in fact, the NRC was enjoined from renewing the licenses of any reactors now that are up for renewal until the problem of nuclear waste is essentially clarified. Of course,
yes,
I think there's going to be
correct.
A lot of weaseling, but the problem of the storage of spent fuel, both here and in Japan, is essentially the problem because the fuel is not spent. That, of course, is a euphemism, I suppose, dreamed up by the industry to lull all of us into complacency. But whether it's stored in pools where essentially it has to be bathed in circulating water for all eternity, that's 4.5 billion years, whichever comes sooner.
Right.
Or it has to be dry casked. And the cask costs at least $1 million each. And they, within 100 years, are guaranteed to have been absolutely corroded and malfunctioning. So they have to be these wastes have to be recasked at the cost right now, at 2012 cost of $1 million. So essentially, what we have is a Pandora's box. And
now, Cecile, that's a great name for those dry casks. Pandora's boxes. I like that. I've never thought of that before, but we'll give you credit for it. Because now, a dry cask is just basically, it's a box, a concrete and steel box, a concrete and metal. Well, yeah, I guess steel, maybe rebar is in it. I'm not sure how they're all they're probably constructed differently in different places. But
I think so.
They are boxes that are set aside at nuclear atomic reactor sites. And they're to contain the, or to hold the, so the fuel rods, which you correctly say are not spent, once they can no longer sustain a chain reaction inside the core of a reactor. And they're basically boxes with vent holes. And it's been shown that they could very vulnerable to terrorist attack. No reason why they won't, corrode and disintegrate. And in your book, The Devil's Tango, I assume that you talk about that.
Oh, absolutely. And also, I talk a great deal about Yucca Mountain. This book was a very steep learning curve, and one of the most excellent books that I read, and that's in my bibliography, is a book by John DeGatta called About a Mountain, and it's about Yucca. And essentially, what it says is that Yucca Mountain is theater. It is theater to more or less lull the folks into assuming that all is well and just go back to sleep. Because the Yucca Mountain happens to be in the Western Shoshone Nation. The Western Shoshone have known, even before the white man, that Yucca Mountain, guess what, is swimming west very slowly. The reason is that it's at least 10% water, and that essentially if you store dry casks in the caverns of Yucca Mountain, you can guarantee that within 21 minutes, the alloys that have been developed to dry cask these wastes essentially corrode in 21 minutes. So essentially, it is a Pandora's box, and one of the ways that the government is availing itself of a cheap and dirty solution is that it gives away. See, I think we have something like 70,000 tons of it in the United States, and worldwide something like 200,000 tons.
This is a high level spent fuel, yes. That's right. And the 70,000 tons we have in the United States exceeds the published design capacity of Yucca Mountain. So even if they could open it, and I have been in Yucca Mountain, by the way, and I've seen the earthquake fault running through it. It's an insane place. And it's surrounded by dormant volcanoes, by the way.
Yeah. So,
it may actually be one itself. We're not sure, but it's possible that Yucca Mountain itself is a dormant volcano. And speaking of dormant volcanoes, I want to bring in Don Goldmacher. Don, you're going to be with us the full show, but what is your involvement? What's your familiarity with Devil's Tango? It was your suggestion to see you come on the show, and so, of course, I want to have you, too. Tell us about Heist and how it segues in with the Devil's Tango here.
Gosh, you don't ask tough questions, do you, Harvey?
No, I don't. I ask softball questions.
Well, I sent you guys an article this morning about what's happening at Pilgrim. That there's a shutout, a lockout at Pilgrim.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they've locked out the workers. Or as we call them in Massachusetts, the Woikas. And so there's been ongoing labor disputes at the Pilgrim nuclear plant. And although I stopped calling them plants, I really haven't disciplined them myself. I don't call them, nuclear reactors. I don't want to call them plants anymore because they're not plants. We like plants, but not nuclear plants. But, Don, this is a, not only is there all these technical and other questions surrounding nuclear reactors, but there's the economic aspect. And, of course, Heist is a film that you have produced, which, tell us what, I don't want to characterize it. Go ahead and tell us.
Let me try to answer the original question.
Sure, okay.
As soon as I read the book, I thought, oh, my God, this is brilliant. I mean, the book is just astonishing in its use of language and different forms of how to write a book. And so the book goes from personal, observations of Cecile's own feelings day by day by day over the past year leading up to the day of publication, the day that she submitted the manuscript, along with the most powerful investigative journalism you're going to see anywhere having to do with the nuclear industry. And I don't want to say that you have not done great work, Harvey, because you certainly have. But
this book is
a dramatic piece, if you will. And Cecile has a background in theater, so it combines all of these forms of presenting information on a page that would normally be a film. And so I called it a multimedia experience, though it's all in written word. And I think your listeners would be well served to run out and get a copy on Amazon, I think.
All right, well, tell us how to get this book and give us a little more on the content. But first of all, it's at Amazon. It's called The Devil's Tango.
The best way to get this book is to go online to Wings Press. That's one word, .com. Wings Press, spelled just the way it sounds.
WINGSPRESS.
Yes, .com. Okay. And to order your copy directly from the publisher.
Okay, so tell us now, when we get The Devil's Tango, what are we getting? What is the content of the book? What are you saying in the book, and how are you saying it?
Do you want me to talk about that, Harvey?
Yes, as if you're on.
Okay. Well, essentially, it fulfills the responsibility of a day-to-day reportage of unfolding events, particularly in light of the fact that there's been a massive media blackout, both in this country and in Japan. I mean, the Japanese are as uninformed as we are, but they're much more proactive.
But you know, not so much in Europe. Actually, the Europeans, because of Chernobyl and because of what's gone on in Germany.
Absolutely.
Europeans are actually being,
absolutely,
I wouldn't say fairly well, but the level of information in Europe about Fukushima is far in advance of what we're getting in the United States.
No question about it. So I felt there was this responsibility. But at the same time, on the personal level, I was trying to wrap my head around the magnitude of this event, and particularly around the issue of Unit 4. Because Unit 4 not only contains the quote-unquote spent fuel, but it also was being refueled at the time of the earthquake, of both earthquakes, because there was one on the 11th and one on the 12th. It was being refueled, and in order to refuel this particular model, the GE Mark I boiling water reactor, they have to raise the core up to join the rods in the pool. So the core is up there as well. Now, the building has suffered, because of the earthquake, structural damage. So its structural integrity is very much at issue. One of my sources said that at the time I wrote this, that it was being shorted up with lumber and sticks and other some such and whatever. So the point is that if the building collapses, and the probabilities are very much greater now, because since the 9 on the Richter, the Tohoku quake in Japan, what that quake did is essentially to put rocks that are very deep in the Earth's core at such pressure that they are releasing moisture. And because of that, the incidence of quakes has multiplied 20 times from the year prior to the 9 Richter quake. And
well, one thing we have to remember, thankfully, about that 9.0 Richter scale quake, which may not be the case in California, if, God forbid, a reactor, one of the four reactors in California gets hit by a quake.
Yes.
This is the quake that caused the Fukushima catastrophe. It was over 100 miles away.
Yes, indeed.
Fukushima. The epicenter was 100 plus miles from,
yes,
Fukushima.
Indeed.
So everybody's saying, oh, well. You know, the interesting,
quake.
Oh, it's a 9.0 quake, and blah, 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 won't happen again. But the fact is, it was very far away.
Yeah, and incidentally, the second quake happened on the 12th, and that was much, much closer. The epicenter was much, much closer, something like 30 miles distant, although it was a 6. So, but in any case, what I want to talk about is the fact that, number one, we are living in an apocalyptic situation where literally we have this sword of Damocles hanging over the northern hemisphere. And already we're feeling the consequences, because there's a belt of radiation that essentially has irradiated the earth, the waters, and the air throughout the northern hemisphere. And so we are essentially... Now it has entered the food chain, so of course it has entered the human body, because we seem to be part of this universe, although we like to pretend that we're separate.
Yeah, and the President of the United States, within a week of the accident at Fukushima, got on national television and assured everybody that the radiation won't come here, and that even if it did, it wouldn't harm anybody. One of the most irresponsible acts in the history of the American presidency, I have to say. We're talking with Cecile Pineda, author of The Devil's Tango, a newly published book available at Amazon and at wingspress.com, and with Don Goldbacher, producer, co-producer of the movie The Heist. Don, you're involved with this book, Devil's Tango, and then tell us a bit about you and Cecile and how what she said that it was the two of you were inspired by the passing of a friend of yours. Now, you're in Berkeley and I believe in California, and can you tell us a bit about the friend and why this would have led to a book and maybe even your movie?
Well, let's get this, the sequencing right. The film began 6 years ago, actually.
This is Heist.
2006. The book was inspired, as Cecile indicated, by a mutual friend of ours who told her she had to... Cecile, what were his exact words? I forget.
He said, I want you to write the book. You need to write the book of life and death.
So this is the American... Like the Tibetan Book of the Dead and the Egyptian Book of the Dead, this is the American or the global or the Fukushima Book of the Dead.
I think it's the global or the planetary book.
Okay, and then it's called The Devil's Tango. And, of course, like the Gary Null film, Knocking on the Devil's Door, it focuses on atomic energy. You know, Fukushima has really changed the equation. The news I have to share, which I will be posting at nukefree.org, N-U-K-E-F-R-E-E.org, is that the Prime Minister of Japan is vehemently pro-nuclear and is forcing, he's just exerting all kinds of pressure to get at least two of the reactors in Japan reopened. In the wake of Fukushima, all the reactors in Japan have been shut. There were 54 that were licensed to operate prior to the catastrophe of 3/11. 11, which of course resulted in at least three, possibly four explosions, and certainly three meltdowns, and then a spent fuel pool flying in the air above Fukushima Unit 4 with the possibility of falling down and apocalyptic consequences. Now, it appears that the Japanese Prime Minister, whose name I won't attempt to articulate, is going to be successful in getting two of the reactors reopened. But for the past month or so, Japan has been completely free of atomic energy.
Yes.
For the first time in more than 40 years, which is a great thing, a wonderful thing. The Japanese local governments, unlike American local governments, as we're finding with the relicensing situation, do have the power to keep reactors shut once they go down for refueling or for repair. The good news from Japan, which I will post at nukefree.org later today, is that a major solar program has passed through the legislature of the Diet, which will allow solar to vastly expand in Japan. And this is a big deal. I'm very happy for that.
Yes, so, that's something to really cheer.
Yeah.
It's Prime Minister Noda. He wants to start up the Ohi reactor primarily. But I should mention to you and to your listeners that there is a worldwide petition by the Japanese to urge Prime Minister Noda to think, to have a second thought. And in order to access that petition and sign it, and I would urge all of your listeners who are concerned about this to please add your signatures, you go to the Nuclear Information and Resource Services
website. NIRS.org.
Yes, NIRS.org. And the petition is there, and you can sign it. And that would be a very, very good thing to do, I think.
Good, good. We'll break in just a minute here. We're with Cecile Pineda, author of The Devil's Tango, and Don Goldmacher, co-producer of the film The Heist. Now, have you ever been to Japan, Cecile or Don, and seen any of this reactor stuff going on?
I was at my computer to see the reactors.
All right, that's a safer place. We hear the Soul-Tokyo theme song in the background. We're going to take a short break here. Identify ourselves as the ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com, and we'll be back after the song and a couple of messages with Don Goldmacher.
In their water rooftop gardens,
Zootopia Green Powered Energy. Thank you so much for being with us here on the Zootopia Green Powered Wellness Show. I am actually talking to you from a cabin in the Turkey Run State Park in Indiana, not far from Terre Haute, Indiana, the ancestral home of my great hero in American history, Eugene V. Debs, socialist candidate for president in 1900, 1908, 1904, 1912, and 1920, when he ran for president of the United States from a prison cell in the Atlanta Penitentiary, because Woodrow Wilson, my least favorite president, a Democrat from New Jersey, put Eugene V. Debs in jail for opposing America's useless, worthless, and tragic entry into World War One. We're talking with Don Goldmacher and Cecile Pineda. Cecile is the author of the new book, The Devil's Tangle, and Don, you are the co-producer of The Heist. Will you tell us, please, about this movie, which has gotten rave reviews all over the country?
Thank you, Harvey. The movie began to be formulated 6 years ago in conjunction with my partner and co-producer, who is right now at Campaign for America's Futures conference, where it screened yesterday to an overflow crowd. The movie really tells the story of what's happened to the American economy over the last 40 years. The top 1% has been waging class warfare in reverse. Class warfare is usually thought of as workers rising up against the 1% and the oligarchs. In this case, the oligarchs rose up quite early, beginning in the early 1970s, inspired by a then-secret memo commissioned by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce called the Lewis Powell Memo, Attack on Free Enterprise, which laid out a total strategy for big business and the malefactors that come along with them to literally take over our government, to bribe their way into power, and to essentially get rid of the New Deal. And the memo can be found on our website. It's called the Powell Memo. And it's a brilliant piece of architecture and strategy formulated by a then corporate attorney for the tobacco industry, who 2 months later was appointed to the U.S. Supreme Court by none other than your favorite president, Harvey, Richard Nixon.
Well, actually, I like Nixon a little better than Woodrow Wilson, although...
Well, there you go.
Later, just in the last couple of weeks, Woodward and Bernstein, of all people, published a piece in the Washington Post, revealing how deep Richard Nixon's anti-Semitism really went. I was a little shocked, actually, to read some of these quotes.
I'm not shocked at all. I've heard that before.
Yeah. I mean, he was really a Jew hater. And another piece came out from Robert Perry, who's done great research on this, reconfirming the fact that Richard Nixon, with Henry Kissinger, committed treason. And I use the word very advisedly, treason, in 1968 by interfering with the attempts of Lyndon Johnson to settle the war in Vietnam. And so, you know, my distaste for Richard Nixon has been greatly, greatly refueled. But he's still he's maybe second or third on the list.
He's second on your list, okay.
Third, actually, number two is Andrew Jackson, my least favorite president. Two Democrats, and then we get to Nixon, a Republican.
Harvey, isn't treason part of the presidential job description?
Well, not always, you know. But anyway, good point. And so, Don, let's hear more about Heist.
Yes, so the film, you know, puts that in as the catalyst for what's happened over the last 40 years, and then segues pretty quickly into how one of his chief proposals to lobby Congress and to make Congress a willing tool of corporations was successful by 1978, actually, when the Business Roundtable and the U.S. Chamber of Commerce were both able to successfully lobby against a labor law reform act in a Democratic Congress with a Democratic president. And that was the turning point for organized labor and unions. And, of course, when Reagan comes into office, he fires the air traffic controllers, And then we see the real demise, the gutting of organized labor in this country and the creation of the Rust Belt in the United States, where, you know, many, many millions of union workers lost their good-paying jobs as a part of the corporate scheme to lower their wage costs and maximize their profits. It was called maximizing shareholder value.
Right, and minimizing the share of the pie going to
minimizing everything else, occupational health and safety, and pensions, and health and welfare. So no longer, and we have a whole section in the film about 401ks versus defined benefit pension plans, and we have a whole section on the coming attack on Social Security and Medicare. And so we really do lay out this orchestrated set of events, including the takeover and consolidation of mass media to continue to pump up the corporate message that we have seen over the last 30 years once Ronald Reagan was. And as a consequence, we are where we are now, including the financialization of the United States economy by outsourcing all of our manufacturing capability. The financial sector of our economy went in the 1960s from 6% of all corporate profits to 42% in 2007 prior to the crash. So that's how much of a stranglehold has taken place with regard to the financial industry. And of course, you know, we got to see Jamie Dimon testifying this morning, you know, in front of the House of Representatives and last week in front of the Senate. And they're all, you know, bowing to this guy as if he's the king, which I guess he is.
Yeah, well, Matt Taibbi has
so
a really
good
piece.
So that's the whole flip that's taken place. And the Democratic Party, you know, if they ever were anything, they're now just another bunch of sycophants.
Right, and the Democratic Party has really just become a total shill for the large corporations. Now, you know, got to remember the Democratic Party started off as the party of slavery and racism with Andrew Jackson, and then had a brief hiatus in the 20th century with Franklin Roosevelt. And
Franklin Roosevelt, exactly.
You know, up through the Clintons, I suppose. You know, being the, well, for a time there, the Democratic Party could be said to have a fairly substantive commitment to worker rights and so on. But, you know, nobody's been better at gutting the labor movement in this country than the Democrats themselves. And so we now have a country where the labor movement has really just been absolutely disemboweled. And, of course, the coup de grace, or you know, the most recent major piece of that was the catastrophe of the failed recall in Wisconsin. As a producer of the Heist Time, tell us what you think about what happened in Wisconsin with this recall vote.
I think you have to put it in the biggest context of not only did they take the movement often out of the Capitol and make it again an electoral issue in Madison, but simultaneously, you know, the whole Occupy movement grew up and was taken down within a few months. So there is clearly an effort by, again, both political parties to have our democracy defined in the very narrowest of terms, that you can only vote. And you can only vote for two parties, essentially.
Right.
Although there are more parties on the ballot, but they don't get airtime and they don't get equal time at all. So we are seeing very much a constriction and an elimination of whatever democracy we did have in years and decades past. Mm-hmm. And I think that Wisconsin shows both the weakness of organized labor and the total reliance on the Democratic Party for the Democratic Party to do anything for workers, because as we saw, the National Democratic Party didn't do anything to help them in Wisconsin.
No,
and the guy who ran against Walker was the same guy who ran against them before and lost.
Right. Last week we had Matt Rothschild on, the editor of the Progressive magazine in Madison, and he pointed out in an excellent piece he wrote that, you know, you had this massive grassroots uprising, and they were doing great things, and they really could have done a general strike. And a general strike would have brought down the government and showed some real power. And instead, they were talked into by the Democrats, talked into during this recall, and then the Democrats, of course, left him hanging out to dry. Obama couldn't bring himself to walk, you know, drive across the river from Minnesota into Wisconsin there was no real reason to believe that the Democrat, if he had succeeded in defeating Scott Walker, would have been any better in the long term. And so I think we have to learn this lesson that the Democratic Party is utterly worthless, not only worthless, but it's very malignant.
Let me say two things, Harvey, about that.
What's that?
Because as we have shown this film to audiences across the country, people are just, on the one hand, stunned and angry as heck, but there's also a closing section of 13 minutes which really begins to offer people alternatives to the status quo. And so we have both an outrage and an inspiration in the film. Now,
Tell us about this final 13 minutes. I mean, I'm the author of a book called Solartopia, which is a vision of a green powered earth. And the reason I wrote it was to give people a clear visual representation of what the planet could look like with social justice and peace and an end to militarization on the beginning of a new
economy.
So you clearly took a message in the end of your book, in the end of your movie, The Heist, to talk about where we can go in a positive mindset. So why don't you give us a rundown on this?
Mm-hmm. Well, what we try to do is to show people some of the things they can do in terms of challenging national policy without us, saying you're going to win in the near term. But more importantly, we talk about what people can do in their local communities. So it's challenging at the top and building from the bottom up. And, starting with the very simplest of things that an individual can do, which is move your money. The single biggest thing that we think that people can do to send a message and to actually make an impact is for people to just move their money to credit.
Be explicit here. Move your money, take your money out of one of the big banks and put it into a credit union. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Move your money out of too big to fail and move it into a credit union, which is certainly government insured as well, but is run by you, the person who is making the deposits and digging out loans, because it's a democratic institution.
That's a small D.
It's owned and run
small
on a nonprofit basis.
Not part of the Democratic Party, small D.
No, small D. It's owned and run on a democratic basis by the members of the credit union. What nicer way to have to deal with your money than that, where you actually get to elect the board of directors?
And do we do it on electronic voting machines, or are there paper ballots?
It depends on the credit union.
Okay.
You're right. I'm with you on that, Harvey.
So what else
is that? The fact of the matter is very, very, very few credit unions went under during this economic catastrophe.
Right. Let me identify you. Hold on. We're talking with Don Goldmacher, the producer of The Heist, and Cecile Pineda, author of The Devil's Tango. Cecile, have you seen The Heist? And
absolutely.
Tell us a bit about this.
Well, here's my take on
conclusion.
Heist. It is Heist, by the way. And my only artistic connection to Heist is the title. I told Don, I insisted it had to be one syllable and it had to be a hard-packed vowel. So it's Heist. But the film, I think, is a completely lucid and clear explanation of how the economy essentially was hijacked and the resulting consequence for the working class and for labor in this country. And there are a number of other films that have addressed these issues, but much more superficially. But I think that Heist really is the chapter and verse of how it happened. And I think it's an electrifying film, and I think that everybody should be able to have a look at it. I know that Don will have something to say about how to get the DVD. And while I'm talking, I just want to briefly say that the way to get Devil's Tango is by going to wingspress.com. And I also want to say that I'm going to be doing a book tour in the Northeast, and I will be talking to four reactor communities in the Northeast, Indian Point, Seabrook in New Hampshire, Pilgrim in Plymouth, Massachusetts, and Vermont Yankee in Vermont. And that tour is being firmed up right now. And so for specific dates and times, you can contact the person who's organizing it, Hattie Nessel. Her number is area code 978-790-3074, or email her at Hattie Shalom. That's one word, HATTIESHALOM, at VerizonNet. That's Hattie Shalom at VerizonNet.
Excellent. So, and I just got an email from Hattie today. So, what are you going to be doing this in the fall before?
Yes, for August 3rd to August 13th.
Oh, that's August. Okay, great. Well, summer. Very good.
Summer.
Wonderful. And Don, where is the heist showing these days?
Well, the easiest way for people to know where it's going to show up next is to go to our website, heist-themovie.com, and you click on the screenings button, and you will see where it's coming up next. But more importantly than that is if people want to set up a screening, again, they should come to the website, and there's a button on the homepage that says host a screening. And so, for example, this Thursday in Syracuse, New York, for anybody in Syracuse, there's going to be a huge screening in downtown Syracuse, and I don't have the theater in front of me. There's going to be another screening in New York next Tuesday, the 26th, in Astoria, Queens.
Oh, okay, good.
And then we're going to have a series of rolling screenings across the country involving communities that want to bring the film to their communities. In addition, people can buy the DVD now from our website. So again, if people individually want to just see it and show it to their, you know, their family and the next door neighbor, that's just fine. And for people who would like to get a taste of what the movie looks like, if they go to the website, again, heist-themovie.com, they will be able to see a 22-minute organizer's version, which we made for Occupy and for other groups that are doing economic justice work in the streets. And that's a short version that, in fact, has been picked up by unions. And they're using it because
well, listen,
that's
okay,
the right
so Don,
size.
That is great. And Hattie, I mean, Cecile.
Cecile.
So, Don, give us the good news here. And then Cecile, at the end,
yeah.
I'd like you to give us some good news from the end of your book, if there is any, on Fukushima, the step-by-step.
There absolutely is.
Okay, good. Well,
several okay. things, but I'll talk very briefly about them. Because I want to be mindful of time.
We have less than 10 minutes. So.
For one thing, I think that on the human scale, although it is, in fact, we can look at this as a planetary catastrophe, at the same time, it's an opportunity. It's an opportunity for those people who have got the strength to really look at the reality of the scope of this, to remain human. That is to say, not to lose track of their good nature, of their ability to share, of their ability essentially to envision and to put into effect changes for a new world, and to smile and keep their good grace and their sense of humor. So that's number one. I think also that the intention of my book is a call to organize, because although we do have a resistance movement in this country, it has not yet reached critical mass. And at the end of the book, Bonnie Erfer, who is a lifelong anti-nuclear activist and connected with Nuke Watch, says, believe me when I say that this movement needs all the people that it can get. We need people to write letters. We need people to educate themselves. We need people to understand where they live in connection to their landscape and to where these nuclear plants are located. And we need people to demonstrate, and we need people to shut down these plants, and we need people people to invade the hearings of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, as Occupy Toledo recently did. They crossed the river into Michigan, and they confronted the NRC in its lair, and it essentially shut down the meeting by saying, "This is nothing but a dog and pony show. We do not trust you nor your judgment in terms of opening." They want to open an AP1000 reactor right on Lake Michigan.
Right. And Bill Pineda, we author of Devil's Tango. We appreciate that. The Solartopian vision is key. It's important to really learn what's happening at Fukushima. If there's one single message of what people can do that you would want them to take from Fukushima and from your book, The Devil's Tango, what would it be?
Love the planet.
Love the planet.
Deeply, deeply, because that's one of the other agendas in this book. I wanted more than anything to show what the stakes are when you lose a planet. I wanted to sing to the magnificence of this beautiful world. So that's because I think that if people love the earth, I think that they will know exactly what to do, both on the local level and on the state and national level.
Okay, beautiful. Thank you, Cecile Pineda. Don Goldmacher, producer, co-producer of The Heist.
It's Heist.
It's what?
Heist, who stole the American dream. That's the title.
What was I saying?
You were saying The Heist. That's
you don't have a The in front of your Heist.
There's no The. That's another film.
Oh.
Truly.
All right. Okay, so Heist, without the The. What is your concluding message here? You say that at the end of the film, there's a lot of things that people can do and be hopeful for. So let's hear.
Mm-hmm. Well, Cecile's message, "Love the Planet," really segues very nicely into what we talk about, which is essentially go local, and create green, resilient economies locally, because these SOBs who are running these corporations, as George Carlin famously put it, they don't give a shit about you. If I'm allowed to say that on the air.
And as Michael Jackson put it, they don't care about us.
They don't care about us whatsoever except to extract maximum profit. So what we need to do is to say, okay, what the future looks like is, as the title of your show and book says, Solartopia. We need to go very deeply green in order to save the planet, if the planet is still salvageable. And we put that message in four different ways, including about a 3-4 minute stretch talking about green energy in the concluding section of the film, as well as worker-owned businesses, as well as credit unions, as well as people resisting on the local level. For example, we feature a group here in Richmond, California, who took on Chevron, where they have a major refinery, and said, "You're going to pay your fair share of taxes." And they put an initiative on the ballot, and they won. Of course, Chevron went ballistic, and they're still going ballistic, but they're paying the tax right now.
Really?
444 times what they were paying before.
So, so they won, and we can win.
People can win.
We have been shutting nuclear plants or preventing them from being built for a long, long time. Richard Nixon, our hero, who we discussed earlier, said in the year 2000, in 1974, he said in the year 2000 there'd be 1,000 nuclear reactors in the United States, and the number was 104, and hopefully it's going to start going down rapidly. Don, quickly, a minute left. What's your advice to everybody?
Look around you, join together with your friends, your neighbors, your family, and build a spirit of cooperation.
All right, well, with that, a spirit of cooperation, Don Goldmacher of Heist, without the "The," and Cecile Pineda of The Devil's Tango, with a "The." We are thrilled to have had you today on the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show. We will go out with Pete Seeger, Darwin, and David Burns. Thank you so much, everybody. We will
Thank
see you,
you
next week.
Thank you, Harvey.
My pleasure. And we'll see you next week on the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show.
garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground.